Welcome to Planet Upload. Planet Upload is a weekly podcast that takes an unfiltered look at the creator ecosystem, online video, and the social media landscape. I'm Lauren Schnipper, creator and online video expert.
And I'm Joshua Cohen, co-founder of TubeFilter and the Streamy Awards. Lauren.
Yes.
I have a question for you.
Oh, I'm excited.
How do you make a YouTube show?
How do you make it? Sorry.
I'll be a little more specific. What type of energy do you need to bring to the camera for a YouTube show?
What kind of YouTube show are we talking about?
We're talking about this YouTube show that I'm doing with TubeFilter. We're starting it up. Don't worry, I'm not cheating on you.
Oh, so this is a plug of the fact that you're cheating on me. Got it.
I wouldn't call it a plug. I mean, you've produced lots of YouTube stuff. What type of energy does someone who's in front of the camera need to bring? Because it doesn't seem like it's their normal energy.
Do you want to give yourself a proper plug? Because you just did like a little plug. Can you give yourself a proper plug?
No, this is legit. I feel like you're a good person to ask.
I know, but I wanted people to know what you're going to do. Tell them what you're doing.
But this isn't a plug. This is a tease. And then later there'll be a plug.
Got it.
So right now I legit have questions.
Okay. So what's the question again?
The question is, it's not the normal energy that people bring to the camera. It's not them. Like, there's very few YouTubers I've met who in person talk like they do in front of the camera.
Oh, God, no. Yeah, no. It's you inherently, you just need to have a lot more energy for camera. But it depends. It entirely depends on what you're doing. I mean, but generally speaking, yeah, you've got to like turn it on. You know, you don't want to be so big like you're on, you know, Broadway. But you want, generally speaking, yeah, you need to articulate and you need to speak. Like, you also want to talk like you're speaking to friends, or you want to be really clear about like, not only who your audience is, but who, you know, kind of, for lack of a better word, pretending that you know who you're talking to. Like, are you talking to a best friend? Are you talking to a colleague? Are you talking to, you know, a superior? Because the way you talk to all of those people would be different in how you would present the information.
That sounds like a great tip. So one, figure out who I'm talking to.
Correct.
Imagine that person.
Correct.
Or people or audience. Mm-hmm. And then two, amp my energy up to what? Not 11, but what?
Yes. I mean, for you, let's just double it. Let's go a hard dub. Let's go a hard, like, so I guess if like 1 to 10, like go 20. You know what I mean?
Because being monotone and sardonic and sarcastic doesn't necessarily translate to camera.
No, if you're going to be sarcastic, own it. Do it.
Okay,
you know
we'll see.
I mean? Don't go half-ass.
We'll see. Thank you. This is a good tip.
See, I'm mad now because I gave you great tips and now it's going to be a massive success and I'm furious because you're cheating on me.
It's not. It's a big snowball. It's all going to become bigger together.
I'm not one of those people that believes there's enough room for everything. this shit is cutthroat and there is definitely not a lot of room. There's too much content out there and I'm furious.
It's not binary and there's no zero-sum games anymore.
None of that's true. Shall we get into big stories? We have a question, though, that kind of leads into our big story. We have a listener question. So do you want to read the listener question?
Yes, we do have a listener question. Sean Callett emailed and asked, TikTok seems to be doing everything possible to make the government forcing a sale or shutdown very politically unpopular before the election. Now, ByteDance is talking with the administration about ways of avoiding a sale. Will it work? Did Kevin Mayer make a mistake about how this would turn out? What's the value of TikTok without data from ByteDance informing the algorithm?
Great question. Lots of layers there. Well, just to give some background. So last week, China made a new, very quick sort of rules. The Chinese government added new items to its list of export controls. So what does that mean? Like you can't, they have to approve and they essentially control certain things on the export list. And what have they just added to that? Artificial intelligent interface technologies, such as speech and text recognition, methods to analyze data, make personal content recommendations, they say are a matter of national security. So effectively what they have said is that any algorithm that recommends content, so for you TikTok users out there, the FYP page would be that. And a lot of people would make the argument that TikTok's most valuable resource or commodity, if you will, is that FYP page and how it is so good at recommending content that you would like. And effectively, the Chinese government is saying, like, no, you can't give that away, sell that without our approval. So what that has done has made TikTok as an entity, much less valuable were it to be sold without that piece of, you know, technology. And so, you know, effectively, this is now it's a game of chess. So, you know, they're not saying that like they wouldn't approve it, but they're saying they have to control it. So in some ways, you know, when I was looking into this, it's like, well, it's kind of proven this whole thing that the Chinese government is kind of in control ultimately of things like a ByteDance and a TikTok. But on the other side of it, it's now said, okay, Trump, you want to stick to your September 15th deadline and force a sale. Well, nobody's probably going to buy this now because it's inherently less valuable. And so now, are you going to shut this down? Are you going to shut down, you know, not a month or so before the election or 2 months before the election, like the most popular app, you know, out there right now? And that's a big choice to make. And I would bet that he's not going to do that. And so it's interesting because it's a bold move by China, but it also kind of, I think, backs the idea that they're ultimately in control.
Yeah, and the important piece to keep in mind here is that TikTok has these U.S. operations. The vast majority of the engineering and everything is still taking place in China.
Right.
And so that's the holdup here, is because China introduced this new law where then they can't export this to any potential U.S. buyer.
Or anybody. My understanding is, didn't say it specifically. It just says that they now control. You have to go to them to get these kind of things approved if you're going to sell them. And so, again, and when I read, it's not that they're not going to, it's just that they're going to make it very difficult. They're claiming it's a matter of, you know, national security, this kind of technology. And so they're just like, if we're going to sell it to somebody, we have to approve it, which is crazy in and of itself.
It's a fair and savvy rebuttal.
It's a chess move. Oh my God, dude. What is it? Knight. What do you do when you like checkmate? That's the one.
Yes, uh-huh. It's checkmate.
Thank you.
So I wouldn't quite call it checkmate yet. That's the end of the game.
Right. Agreed.
This might just be check, your move. Yeah, what's interesting about this is then there's been all this analysis of TikTok's algorithm, and basically no one thinks they can replicate it.
Which I also am just like, really, though? You know what I mean? Like, is it that good? Maybe.
I feel like it has to be that good. I think you're talking to two people that have no engineering backgrounds. So to us, this just looks like, oh yeah, magic, make another algorithm. Right. But if we brought anyone on here that knows anything about engineering and how these things work, they'd be like, no, it's incredibly complicated to produce these kinds of results on a consistent basis that brings popular, entertaining, safe stuff to the top, mm-hmm. and pushes everything else down. Yeah. And so there's been these very interesting analyses about TikTok's algorithm, where supposedly TikTok does its best to make sure every single TikTok gets 100 views at least. One takeaway is that TikTok supposedly tries to make sure every individual TikTok gets at least 100 views, and then kind of plots the trajectory of that TikTok based on those first 100 views. So right. How often it's going to be recommended, to whom it's going to be recommended, and how long it will be recommended for.
Getting back to Sean's question, where he asked, what's the value of TikTok without data from ByteDance informing the algorithm? You know, it's a really good question. It's not valuable. I mean, there's tons of, you know, users and you know, it's got a ton of information that is incredibly valuable. It's inherently less valuable. One of the things I was reading, that one of the options for a sale would be that TikTok would be sold and then they would license the algorithm from China, but that kind of completely defeats the purpose of like completely extricating yourself from like China. So I don't know that that's going to be a thing. So I, you know, there's also like apparently, you know, Microsoft and whomever are going back to their bankers and trying to calculate how valuable TikTok is without the algorithm.
Do you use TikTok, Lauren?
I have used it. I wouldn't say I'm an avid user.
As an avid user of TikTok who spends 72 hours a day on the platform, its algorithm seems like it's everything, though. It's so good. The For You page is so good. And I was thinking about like why it's so good. And they just have this ability where if it's true that they are trying to give every single TikTok 100 views and then base its trajectory on that, because of just the format of TikToks themselves, they have the ability to do that. You can do that with every YouTube video because every YouTube video is too long. Mm-hmm. Like, and you can do that with TikToks, though, because TikToks are anywhere between a few seconds and a minute long. Mm-hmm. And so it gives them this ability to showcase more individual videos, TikToks, to more people. And then that can then further inform their algorithm and how much they're promoting it. And it's a luxury that these other platforms just don't really have because of just the nature of how long the content is.
But I also think you're talking about how great the algorithm is. You know, we have to mention that, you know, there was a really big issue this past week where this horrible video that initially was like on Facebook, I believe it was somebody killing himself, awful, and it was surfacing a ton on TikTok, and they were like scrambling to get it down. And it was kind of one of the first times that like you've heard that, you've heard these things horribly, unfortunately, on Facebook, you know, kind of going viral, but like they were just scrambling to get it down. It was also being like disguised as something it wasn't in certain accounts, and they were like, you know, banning all the accounts, and they were taking very swift and immediate action, but it still, you know, a hole in the algorithm was found, which
is unfortunate. I just wouldn't call that a hole in the algorithm. I call that some type of other kind of service that needs to be layered on top of the algorithm, or some type of different product or a different kind of feature that they have to put on top of the algorithm, this safety mechanisms that lots of these other platforms, especially YouTube, have invested a ton of infrastructure, resources, and humans into solving the problem of how do we make sure that the good stuff is being promoted and the bad stuff no one can see. Mm-hmm. So YouTube has all these machine learning capabilities. They have all these human reviewers. They have these abilities where viewers can flag different videos, and they all add up to this system that, for all intents and purposes, has been a lot better now than it was before in suppressing content that the general public shouldn't see for a variety of different reasons. And so I wouldn't call that an algorithm issue. I think that that kind of safety mechanism works with the algorithm, and TikTok just hasn't had a lot of experience in developing that yet, right. Partly because they haven't needed to, but now that they feel like they need to, I mean, they definitely need to now.
They definitely need to.
I think that you'll see them develop some of those systems, and hopefully they'll have a net positive effect.
Yeah, but I'm sure that they have some of those systems in place. I mean, they're doing such a great job publicly in other areas of like getting ahead of the curve with thinking about monetization for creators and all this sort of stuff. Like, I don't think they've been sitting there just like waiting for a bad thing to happen to start thinking about safety mechanisms. I just think that they're not as robust, obviously, as they need to be.
Of course not, but it's just different when one actually happens than when like when there was the Christchurch massacre on YouTube. YouTube was very swift and dealt with a lot of people re-uploading that footage, and they were able to take it down in a meaningful fashion. But now, just because of that, I think they've even gotten better at all their safety mechanisms.
That was initially on Facebook. It wasn't even initially on YouTube.
Right. And YouTube's ahead of the curve from Facebook and Instagram, these other platforms doing stuff like this too.
So, you know, did Kevin Mayer make a mistake about how this would turn out? I think the question is, Kevin Mayer make a mistake about like sort of leaving? I mean, not if he didn't want to deal with like, not if what he wanted to do was just run a big giant global conglomerate, because that would not be what he was doing right now. You know, he'd be trying to like, I mean, this is a mess, and this isn't running a global conglomerate. This is trying to like pick up the pieces and try to make sure TikTok doesn't like kind of go away. So, you know, was he wrong? I don't know what he was. I don't know that he publicly said exactly why he was leaving, but all the kind of press and stories around it were that, you know, he came in to run not just TikTok, but ByteDance. And he won't be able to do that in this role. And so I don't think if that's really what he wanted to do, then no, he wasn't wrong in leaving, because it's a mess right now.
Yeah, my question always was, why is he leaving now? Mm-hmm. Why doesn't he just wait till we perhaps have a new administration at the beginning of the year? Mm-hmm. And he had to have known something. And I've changed my kind of thought process around what he might have known. I thought he knew that the sale was imminent. And so that would mean he would be working for someone else. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to work for someone else. He could have stayed at Disney making $10, $12 million a year working for someone else. He wants to run a big global media company. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking he must know that the sale is days away and the writing's on the wall, and he doesn't want to go work for another U.S. boss. Mm-hmm. Now I'm thinking maybe he just didn't want to deal with all this, or there was something he saw in ByteDance leadership throughout this process that he's like, this isn't for me.
I mean, this move by the Chinese government, again, like taking all the politics and stuff aside, like it kind of proves the point that the Chinese government ultimately is in control of these things. You can't deny that. If they are literally overnight, and it was very like hush hush how they did it, just sort of secretly added like algorithms to the list of things that you have to get approval before exporting. I mean, that's controlling a company, an independent company.
You could look at it that way, or you could look at it from the vantage point of a country trying to protect the businesses that are developed in that country and kind of shield them from basically like kind of pillage by foreign nations.
Totally. But can you imagine if the similar thing was done and Facebook wanted to sell and then it was like Facebook's not allowed to sell because of, you know, I mean, there's huge movie, like Legendary was sold to a Chinese company. I mean, we didn't say that wasn't possible. I don't disagree. I'm sure I would imagine that's what their thought process is. But
yeah, but Legendary was willingly sold to a Chinese company.
Correct. I understand. Quickly to round this out, will this work? Will this delay work? We should also mention that there's an actual TikTok employee is suing the government. So a guy named Patrick Ryan filed an injunction motion to stop the Department of Commerce from enforcing Trump's order. His argument is that it would prohibit TikTok from paying the salaries to its employees in the U.S. A couple of just, you know, excerpts from his motion. This Trump's order deprives the plaintiff, so Ryan, and of his constitutionally recognized liberty interest in pursuing his employment of choice. It discriminates against plaintiff based solely on his employment affiliation with a so-called Chinese quote-unquote company, although U.S. employees of other social media companies are doing the exact same work, are not being discriminated against. Do I think this delay and all these things are going to work in delaying the sale? I absolutely think so. I absolutely think that the chances of Trump now saying, whoop, you didn't sell by September 15th, you're going to close it down, I think are slim to none. I think before the election I think there's literally no way.
Yeah, I just don't think there's a lot of political capital to make it happen, too.
No, I think there's no way. I don't think this is over, but I don't think he's going to shut it down by September 15th, which is like 5 days away. Have we said all there is to say about TikTok and sufficiently answered Sean's question? Lauren,
we could go on for so much longer, but I think that's satisfactory for now.
I mean, right? Next topic, Snapchat launches permanent public profiles and audience analytics. This is fascinating. So Snapchat's got 239 million daily active users, and soon they will have access to a suite of features, including personalized public profiles that was previously only for verified creators. And so what they're saying is that they want creators to have a more permanent presence and build out their audiences. They revealed this during a VidCon presentation. It's just interesting. You know, Snapchat has always kind of been this ephemeral thing, and now they're sort of leaning into creators, allowing them, you know, because some of these, you know, users are effectively probably going to become creators because they're going to be able to have a more permanent presence. But yeah, previously they never allowed its general user base to have front-facing profiles, but they've been ramping up their production on original shows, and it's, you know, introducing a ton of stuff. So, you know, other things that they're going to get, people will get as a result of an account photo, a text description, the location, email contact, URL of choice, access to some features called story replies where they can, you know, reply to stories. And they'll get advanced analytics. They're basically, the only thing they're not going to get is like the verified star. They're basically getting the entire profile. What do you think about this?
One, can you remind me which news outlet had the exclusive story on this?
TubeFilter had the exclusive story on this, Josh.
Yes,
Joshua Cohen,
we did.
The co-founder of TubeFilter. And another plug for you today. I love this side of you. This is great.
And I'm proud of this one too, because I feel like it's one of our predictions coming to fruition. Just a couple weeks ago, Snapchat announced that it would start allowing users to link externally, so have links on other platforms that link back to Snapchat originals. They have these big original series with people like Will Smith and Nikita Dragon that are getting millions of views within the Snapchat platform that you can't view outside of it in any capacity whatsoever.
Right.
But now Snapchat's saying they're going to open up their platform a little bit and allow these external links so people on the internet, people on their mobile phones, on Twitter or wherever else, can then click these links and then go view these original series, which is going to amp up its numbers. And at that time, we were talking about how this kind of opening up of Snapchat, it can be a real big player against TikTok, because Snapchat has this coveted audience that is very young, that is addicted to the app, that wants to continue its streak with friends by messaging them every day. It commands more Gen Z audience than Facebook, Instagram, and Facebook Messenger combined, something like 45 to 50 million people in the US in that demographic. So it has this coveted demo, and now opening up the platform even more so that users can have their own profiles, maybe even become popular on it when they aren't stars already. Maybe Snapchat can develop some of its Snapchat stars. Maybe they can start having the platform open up even more and give people greater ability to download snaps with their username, handle, whatever, Snapchat logo on it, upload it to other platforms like TikTok does. I think this is starting to get really interesting for Snapchat and is the beginning of them to really take on TikTok in a meaningful capacity.
I think it's a huge move for them to take on TikTok. I mean, you can imagine that this has been in, you know, talked about internally there for a very long time. And I think they just are seeing this trajectory of TikTok and they are just not messing around. And yeah, we talked about this, like, yeah, making things a bit more open and not being so afraid to take things off a platform. I think there's benefits for that. And I also think for, you know, Snap, it's been interesting to see their growth, that it's, you know, it's not been this crazy intense growth like a Facebook, but it's been more measured. I mean, listen, 239 million daily active users is nothing to, you know, snooze about. I don't know. But it's, you know, it's not a billion. It's not 2 billion, but it's been more measured and controlled and safer. I mean, you really don't hear about a lot of kind of, you know, really nefarious things going on the platform, largely because they go away after a minute because everything's ephemeral. So this is taking a big step in a different direction that brings on a host of other kind of potential issues, but it's what I think is going to be the trend, which we've talked about. Like, I think it's all about making things more open and being able to share and not being so guarded. I think it's ultimately the right move. It makes me a little bit, I don't know, sad's the wrong word, but I have appreciated how measured Snapchat has been in a lot of ways. And so it'll be very interesting to see. And I think this is going to absolutely encourage like your Snapchat star now. You know, most people on Snapchat I don't really know if there's anybody that's like a native Snapchat kind of creator, right? Like, it's people are big elsewhere and then they kind of have a Snapchat presence and stuff. So this could definitely lead to that, which is very interesting.
And what makes you think they aren't going to be measured about this rolling out or this process or this taking on of TikTok?
It's not that I don't think that they're going to be measured about it. It's just that they have been, it's just a different direction, I think, inherently than they've gone. Although you could argue that like the original shows were going sort of more public, but it was hard to see them outside of the platform. It's just when you're opening it up like this, you're losing more control. So therefore, it's more difficult to be kind of measured or have control, right? And so it's like, you know, and there's a lot of issues that come with that. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, excited to see where this goes. This is the first or second step of many.
Yeah.
And no, I'm looking forward to it.
I think we're going to see a lot more moves from Snapchat coming up. I think they're kind of the sleeping giant that nobody really pays enough attention to. And I think that there's a lot more to come from them.
Exactly. And no one pays attention to them because no one's on the platform.
Right. Well,
not no one, but no one in like media, no one in tech, no journalists, because you don't have access to see the stuff on it.
Well, they have Discovery, the show. It's not like nobody in media's on it. But I see what you're saying.
Yeah, but like all journalists are on TikTok, have easy access to TikTok, or seeing TikTok on their Twitter feeds, or seeing it all over the place, right?
Right.
So that
right.
causes more journalists to write about them, which causes them more people to read the stories that the journalists write about them, and more people to check out TikTok. That's not happening with Snapchat.
Correct. Moving on, last but not least, Facebook Watch hits 1.25 billion monthly users, the company says. This is significant for a lot of reasons, mostly because YouTube touts 2 billion logged in users a month. So Watch arguably is gaining a lot of ground. The fuzzy part of this, it's, you know, actually unclear, you know, how much video people are streaming, because this also includes everyone who has streamed as little as 1 minute of video of Facebook Watch. So they're not announcing how much video people are actually watching. That Matt Hennick, who is the VP of Content Strategy and Planning, you know, had a bunch of quotes in this announcement. And, you know, what he said was, what we feel is our real differentiator is the social features. It's just an amplifier to content. I actually went on, I haven't been watching, you know, watch that much at all, because it's just not in my regular feed. So last night I kind of went on and I started watching some shows, and I was like, is this really so much more social? And I guess just really what he's talking about is the sharing, the ability to share the videos much easier. Because when I was there, I remember it was always like, I worked a lot with the Originals team because they were trying to do shows that included big Facebook stars. And it was like, you know, they want to make these shows interactive, but we didn't really have that many tools to do that. And I kind of briefly looked last night, I didn't see a ton of polling and things like that you could make more interactive. At the end of the day, it's like I could just share this video really easily. And I ended up watching a really long video of Liv Tyler giving a tour of her amazing brownstone in New York City, which, by the way, is amazing.
That's the one benefit Facebook has over other social media platforms or other video platforms is where you're doing all the sharing on the platform itself. Like YouTube, you go share stuff on Twitter or on Facebook or on Instagram or wherever else.
Right.
Twitch, you go share streams somewhere else too. Facebook, that is the one advantage. You can share the things and watch the things and then share more things all within the platform itself.
They've had, again, COVID kind of definitely boosted Facebook Watch overall's usage, strong growth in live streaming, surge in viewing of religious and spiritual content, gaming, fitness content. And, in you know, we mentioned this last week, but in the gaming category, they're saying that more than 200 million people watch live videos each month on Facebook, with watch time on Facebook gaming growing 75% in Q1 and Q2 this year based on watch hours. We don't really know exactly what that means, but there's...
And I was thinking about why we don't know exactly what that means and what makes me kind of hesitant to believe these big numbers coming from Facebook. And one, it's just because it's this huge, massive platform. And how are they quantifying these views or users or whatever else? Is it because something shows up in their feed? Is it because people watch a second of it as they scroll by their feed or what? We don't really have information on that.
But video doesn't show up in people's feed anymore. In their watch feed, you mean? In their watch feed. Because in regular news feed, you don't get really videos anymore, which is so weird.
And then also, I was thinking about this. Oh, I think the real reason I'm hesitant about all this is because Facebook was knowingly inflating its video metrics for over a year, reportedly. Back in 2018, a bunch of reports came out that during kind of the first wave of Facebook Video, Facebook Watch, whatever you want to call it, when it was kind of getting all these publishers to come onto Facebook and put video on it, there's all these reports that it was dramatically inflating its numbers to try to increase the amount of videos that publishers were putting on the platform and the amount of resources that they were dedicating to it. So I feel like that's just stuck with me too, to think like, what do these numbers actually mean now?
Well, I mean, I was there during that time, and that's what I'll say about that. But I don't believe that. Listen, my understanding is that all these numbers can be backed by some version of truth. And, like, you know, the data scientist's job is to present the best story with data. You know, the best data scientists out there are storytellers, right? And so if they're counting a second view, one second of viewing, 1 minute of viewing or whatever as a view, that's a view. Like, nobody, there's no standard for what a view is, right? We just don't know exactly. And they're not, I mean, like, here they did say they count 1 minute of viewing, but we don't really know, you know, overall what that means. If it's like, if of these 1.25 billion, if, you know, half of them have only watched for 1 minute, is that as significant? You know, that's the stuff we don't know. It's tough because there's no arbiter of the truth of this. There's no standardized, it's not Nielsen, right? Like, which counts things pretty much the same. So it's, they're always going to tout these big numbers.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I see all the reasons to do it. I'm just a little hesitant to dive full-fledged into these numbers.
Yeah, which I think is fair. I mean, if they're saying it's like 1 minute, you're like, great, cool. How many of those 1.2 billion, 2.5 billion are watching for a minute and never came back? Like, let's discuss, you know, or come back for 1 minute, you know, who knows? Facebook Gaming also, we should mention, signed esports pro King Richard Nelson. Also, you know, he is not a celebrity gamer. He is not a casual gamer, as you would say. But, you know, he was quoted saying, Facebook is the largest social media platform in the world, so it's easy for me to jump at this opportunity to significantly grow my brand through gaming and original content. There's also, what's interesting though, too, there's also flexibility how I'm able to distribute my content, because he can do Facebook Gaming or Instagram Live. So that's very interesting. It's not just about Facebook. So this is a big, this is probably one of the first big kind of, you know, gamers that they've signed, and certainly in a long time.
This guy is a legit gamer. He's not a celebrity gamer. He wasn't big on another platform for doing something else that Facebook then corded over there and said, hey, why don't you play video games over here too? He has a substantial following on Twitch. He has a pretty big following on YouTube. He's coming over to Facebook Gaming. And that caveat with Facebook Gaming and Instagram is a pretty interesting twist that I hadn't thought about before. Mm-hmm. That might actually open this up to more people, especially if this guy does well. I think there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on this to see how well he does, how well his audience converts, and if he's still able to maintain his same type of numbers and the same kind of like quality of viewership. And then I think a lot more people could potentially start to jump ship. It's also worth noting that he is managed by Loaded, the same huge gamer management firm that represents Shroud, Ninja, mm-hmm. and a bunch of others too.
Yeah, that's incredibly significant. I have a quick upload. On the heels of Teespring's announcement last week about their partnership with TikTok, they hired former Nike senior brand director Leslie Green. I have met Leslie Green, and he is, I think, what the kids call a badass. I think he is going to level up this company tremendously and really take it to the next level. I think it's a really, really, really huge move. Les is a really interesting guy and got really interested in the creator ecosystem through a few collaborations with Nike and kind of looked around and was like, what company is really kind of owning this, and, you know, landed at Teespring. So I think that says a lot. Not just about, you know, Teespring making the great move of that hire, just like him choosing to go with the Teespring says a lot about the company and where it's going. So I think that's I'm excited to see what he does.
Me too. I think this is fascinating too when you couple it with the fact that John Wexler recently went to Shopify. He was a former Adidas executive who oversaw the Yeezy business. Mm-hmm. And so he just joined Shopify as the vice president of its creator and influencer program. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing these people from these big sneaker companies coming over to kind of digital native direct-to-consumer platforms, mm-hmm. working with creators and influencers in a meaningful way. I think that this space is just about to get very interesting.
Very interesting. All right, dude, I think that's all. That's all we got this week.
Lauren, we did it.
We did it.
I'll see you casually gaming on Facebook or next week on Planet Upload.
I'm a celebrity gamer now.
Today's show was produced by Lauren Schnipper and me, Joshua Cohen. Original music is by London Bridge. You can check him out on Instagram at London Bridge Music. And make sure you subscribe to Planet Upload. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you like our show, please recommend it to a friend. Thank you for listening to Planet Upload, and we will be back next week.